Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The pre-med year, session number 465. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Well, welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. Another great Q&A from Instagram last week. I'm loving Instagram Lives these days because I'm not just reading and answering questions. I'm actually bringing students on and we're interacting and having great discussions. It's one of the reasons I love doing Ask Dr. Gray pre-med Q&A because I get to have a live 20-minute or so session with a student just helping them on their journey to medical school. And that's what we're doing on Instagram. If you want to be a guest on Ask Dr. Gray, on application renovation, on mission accepted, if you get to that point, which hopefully you will soon, then go to medicalschoolhq.net/apply. That's medicalschoolhq.net/apply. And we set up a page there where you can just kind of click on which thing you want to be a guest on, and we'll get you on, and hopefully, and we'll share your story with the world to help more people. That's been my mission here from day one, is to help kind of demystify everything, to help kind of democratize this whole process so that everyone gets this information for free. We believe that the information to get into medical school should be free, and that's why we continue to create podcasts and videos and everything else to give you that information. And yeah, a pretty packaged book will cost a couple dollars. But other than that, it's almost all free out there for you from us. So medicalschoolhq.net/free. Let's go and jump into our IG Live. What's going on, Instagram Live? It is Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern. That means it's Q&A day. It's Q&A day. Hello, hello. I'm excited for Q&A day. Hello, Yvonne Genealogy, Bridge in the Fridge. What's up? What's up? What's up? I'm excited. It's a good day. We're going to have some fun. We're going to maybe give away some stuff. We're going to hang out. We're just going to be. As always, if you are new here, what we do today is just answer questions, hang out, and really just help you understand and get a better sense of your journey. I would appreciate if you click that little camera button and come on live with me. That makes it much more fun for everyone involved. And if you can't do that, you can ask some questions, but I will most likely bring on all of the people requesting to come on live versus just reading questions and answering questions. So that's how we play today. Can I give my best interview tip? Be yourself. Be yourself. It's a conversation. Treat it like a conversation. Treat it like you're just meeting a friend for a coffee at the coffee shop. That's all you got to do. Too many people overthink the medical school interview. All right, let's see if we can get some people on. LG, what's going on? Leon, Nick, hello. Marcio, hello. All right, looks like we can't bring on Marvin's. Let's bring on Zaid. See if we can bring on Zaid here. Hello, hello, hello. If you think your friends want to watch, then you should bring them on too. What's up?
Just 1 second. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So I had a question about taking the MCAT twice. And I did take the MCAT twice, and I got a 502 twice.
Okay.
I applied to a school, University of Kentucky, and they're sitting at a 506 average.
506 average or 506 median?
Average, I believe. Median? I'm not sure, honestly.
Where are you getting 506 from? MSAR?
No, their admissions, like the
from UK. Their website. Okay, so very likely could be average. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But, you know, I did my interview. It went good. Okay. I'm supposed to hear back.
So you interviewed? That's a good sign.
Supposed to hear back. Yeah. Supposed to hear back this week. Okay. I'm also like a Kentucky resident. My GPA is higher than their average. So what do you think I should expect?
I expect that they like you well enough to interview you, and the rest is really up to them. Unfortunately, there's... Oh, Zaid's gone. Zaid's like, screw you, I'm out. I'll finish the answer. Unfortunately, there's no formula. There's no equation to tell people, here's what's going to happen, right? Because you have a 502, because it's 4 points lower than the average, because whatever, there's no easy way to tell you what's going to happen. The MCAT is one variable. Your GPA is one variable. Your extracurriculars are another variable. Your letters of recommendation are another variable. Your interview is another variable. So many variables. So you got an interview. Now you just wait. That's all there is to it. All right. If you want to come on live and not to bounce like Zaid did, then come on and click that little camera button. We'll get you on here as well. It's the best place to really interact. Hello, Saba says, do you offer any help or advice for residency applications and doing well in medical school? I do not currently. I have done some residency personal statement editing, stuff like that. It's all the same, right? At the end of the day, whether you're applying to medical school, post-bac, dental school, PA school, residency, at the end of the day, all of it is learning how to tell your story. So it's definitely something we could do. It's just not something we focus on right now. All right, all right, all right. Let's get some more people live because that's where the magic happens. Do-do-do-do. Hello, hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm Neable. I had a question about post-bac. So somebody had told me that I have to do my post-bac at my undergrad institution just so that it can match up. Is that accurate?
Not at all. Not at all. And actually, Dr. Scott Wright, who's my VP of Academic Advising at MAPT, actually typically says the opposite, is you should go somewhere else so that you're not just taking the same classes and you can show that you can do well outside of retaking classes. So there's no rules. At the end of the day, there are no rules when it comes to where you do your post-bac and what classes to take. At the end of the day, the goal of doing a post-bac, assuming you're not doing it as a career changer, assuming you're doing it because you need to improve your grades, the goal is to show that you are academically capable of doing well in medical school. And that means getting as close to a 4.0 as possible for as long as possible.
Okay. All right. That's all that I needed to
That's
know.
It.
Also, like, some of the post-bac programs kind of require like the MCAT to be done.
Yeah. I despise that. Absolutely despise it. What they are typically doing is they are weeding people out to say the MCAT, right? They understand that the MCAT is a big variable. It's just one variable, but it is a big variable when it comes to applying to medical school. And they are using it to weed out people who they don't think are going to be able to do well on the other side when it comes to taking the MCAT. And so they weed you out to begin with and say, your MCAT score is not good enough to come to our program. And we want students who we know are going to do well so that we can then market and say 96% of our students get into medical school. I'm like, well, no crap. That's because you weeded them out to begin with. So I absolutely despise it. And there are plenty of programs out there that don't require an MCAT. So I would look at those.
All right. Okay,
thank you. The whole, in my mind, the whole goal of going to a post-bac program, especially if you're needing to improve your grades, is to build better and more robust study habits, to understand the material better, build a bigger foundation of that material so that you can do well on the MCAT. So take it for what it's worth. That's my opinion.
Okay. Thank you. How do I get out of the video?
Oh, I'll kick you out here.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. All right. See, piece of cake. Kick you out. All right. Let's get some more people on. Again, if you want to come on live with me, click that little camera button with a little plus sign in it and come on. Hello, hello.
Hi. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Good, thank you. So I took my MCAT 3 times.
Okay.
And 505, the last one. I applied to University of Nebraska Medical Center.
Okay.
I had an interview this next week.
Great.
And I'm kind of wondering, my MCAT is 10 points below their average. It's a 515.
Yeah.
So
their median, very likely their median, not their average.
Yeah. Do you have any advice, in the interview, how I can, I don't want to mention that my MCAT is lower than what they're...
Surprise, surprise, they already know.
Yeah.
So it's not like they invited you for an interview not knowing that your MCAT score is a 505.
That's true.
Right? So the question that you're asking, the fear that you have in your mind is, I'm not good enough. What the heck am I doing here?
Yeah.
That's what you're telling yourself. Oh my gosh, I got an interview. My MCAT is 10 points below their median. I'm not supposed to be here. I'm a fraud. This is a mistake. They invited you for a reason. And this is why I despise the MSAR. And I despise looking at stats when it comes to applying to medical schools. Because the MSAR only tells you the students from what that school accepted. Right? It shows you the median, shows you 25th, 75th, shows you 10th and 90th percentiles. Right?
Right.
And when students use the MSAR to pick schools and to figure out where they want to go, they look at the MSAR and they self-select into schools with stats that match theirs. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, let's look at this, right? Hold on 1 second. So if we look at MCAT percentiles, and we look at the newest percentile from the AAMC, and we look at the median MCAT score for a lot of medical schools in the MSAR, it's 513, 514, 515, 518 at some schools, right?
Yeah.
That's 85th percentile plus. 85th percentile. There are many more students getting into medical school way below the 85th percentile. So when you look at the MSAR, when you look at median MCAT score and you try to compare it to yourself and go, I only have a shot at this school if I'm within that median or if I'm within the 25th or if I'm within the 10th percentile, you are doing yourself a disjustice because the MCAT is just one part of the application. They invited you for an interview because they liked your application.
Okay.
Including your MCAT score. To them, your MCAT score is good enough. Now, post-interview, when the admission committee gets together and they talk about you and try to figure out if they want to invite you for an interview, it may be an issue. They may love everything else about your application, and they at the end of the day, they just go, you know what, that 505 is just not good enough compared to all of the other applicants we have. But that's that's their problem, not your problem. You don't have to mention it. You don't have to justify it. If they ask you about it, sure, talk about it. Where do you think you went wrong? Were you scoring 510, 512, 515 on practice tests and you just had a bad day? Right? It's your third time taking it, so that's probably not it, right? So don't worry about it is the final answer. You have an interview. Prepare the best for your interview and don't worry about having an MCAT score 10 points lower than their median.
Yeah. I'm reading your book for the interview and your ethical questions kind of scare me when I'm looking. Like the one, like, if like you were the, if you gave a medication to a son and like, I'm the father, what do you say to me? And they accidentally died. I was like, I don't even know how to answer that kind of question. Like,
no, you do. You do. And here's the problem, right? When you say you don't know how to answer that question, what you're thinking most likely is, what am I supposed to say? What would a doctor say? Right? What am I legally allowed to say? Blah, 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 blah. That's the mindset that students go into interviews with. And it's the wrong mindset. You are not expected. Surprise, you're just a pre-med student. You're not expected to know what a doctor is supposed to do in that situation. At the end of the day, the medical school interview is a communication test. How well can you portray empathy and say, you know what, Dad? I'm sorry to tell you, blah, 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 blah. Right? And it's just like, what would you say to a friend who like you got in a, you wrecked their car, right? They let you borrow their car and you wrecked it. And you call them up and say, Sally, I'm sorry to say, right? What would you say in that situation? You didn't go to class to learn what to say. You're a human being with emotions and you just talk, right?
Okay.
Hopefully you're not a psychopath. Hopefully you just talk. And that is how you master the medical school interview is shocker. You just be yourself. What would I do in this situation? If it's not a dad, a patient's dad in front of me and it's just a friend and I just dinged up their car.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good stuff. I love talking about this stuff and dispelling myths and trying to figure out and help you guys understand that you guys are complicating the heck out of everything. Just be yourself. Just be yourself. At the end of the day, that's all you need to do. All right, let's see if we can bring Marvin's back on. He was mad, or she was mad that... they couldn't request to come on again, but it just doesn't look like it's working for them. So we're going to move on. Bring on Jared. Hello, hello. Let's bring on Jared. Come on down. What's up?
Nothing much, man. How are you?
I am doing well. What's going on? What can I help you with?
So I'm curious about volunteer hours.
Yeah.
So... I cranked out about 600 this past summer.
Okay.
And I don't plan on applying for another probably 2 to 3 years.
Yep.
Would it seem like a bad thing if I just stick with those 500 or 600 and that's it? Or would it?
I tell me.
It'd probably look better. But
you tell me. What does it look like if you did that? And when you say volunteer hours, are you talking about clinical hours or like Habitat for Humanity type volunteering?
No, this is so I'm an EMT, so I have about like 3,000 clinical hours to this point.
Okay,
but this is primarily just like community service hours.
Okay,
I guess I should
call
it.
non-clinical volunteering.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. So that's great. It's one of the lesser important things when it comes to an application. So I don't think I don't think schools will have a huge issue if you do that. It potentially will look like you're checking a box. But again, it's one activity in a sea of all of your activities. So if you're an EMT, if you continue to do that, great. you are showing consistency in your activities, just not in one. So I worry less about it being non-clinical, or I worry less because it is non-clinical. I would worry more if it was 600 of clinical and that's it, and there's no consistency, because then what you're doing is you're applying to medical school saying, hey, I really want to be a doctor. I love being around patients. I haven't been around patients in 2 years.
Yeah. Right?
That's the bigger issue in my mind. So
Now,
if you can go and volunteer once a month, once every couple of months at the soup kitchen, whatever, great. Keep doing that. But if not, that's okay too.
Okay. Now, clinical volunteer hours, is that important?
No. So it's always this like big confusion and just semantics a lot of time. If students will say, I have volunteer hours, but volunteer could be non-clinical or clinical. And that's just the language of the application service, right? AMCAS, which is the biggest application out there, they break it down into volunteer clinical, volunteer non-clinical, paid clinical, paid non-clinical. You are not given bonus points because your clinical is volunteer versus paid. So if you have paid EMT experience, great. You don't need volunteer clinical experience on top of that.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. Yeah, have a great day.
You too.
All right. As my good friend, what's his name? I can't think of his name. Oh, man. I have his book. I started his book, and then I kind of got bored after a while. What the heck's his name? Help me out, folks. All right. Who is that? I can't think of his name.
McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey. There we go. Kevin Hart, come on. Jeez, that's not right. Matthew McConaughey. All right, what's going on?
Hi, I'm trying to fight the rain and go on the class, but I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
I am interviewing... Okay, so let me back up. I'm weird. I only applied one school.
We're all weird.
Because I'm enamored with the school, I guess. I wanted to do early decision, but my application was verified one day after the early decision cutoff. So I'm so, dedicated to the school that I would, if I didn't get in this cycle, would, take a gap year and reapply because I want to go so bad. I guess I can tell. It's IU. I live in Indiana, so I'm in a city with a regional campus that I've had close ties with.
Okay.
And I have an interview in a few weeks there, and I don't know if it's a bad idea. Should I bring that up that I only applied there and then I'm so committed to the school, or is that a bad look?
So my general advice for these types of questions, whether it's this sort of thing or anything else, is let the interviewer lead, right? It's a dance. They lead, you follow. So I typically don't like just jamming in my agenda into an interview going, I just want to let you know you're the only school I applied to, blah, 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 right? They very likely will ask you, why do you want to come to Indiana? And you can say, I'm from here, blah, blah, blah. It's actually the only school I applied to. And it fits well within the conversation, right? So I think if it's natural, if it comes up naturally in that way, go for it. I don't think it's hurting you at all to say, I only want you, right? They're not going to think you're some crazy stalker. A lot of people do that, right? A lot of people have their reasons for why they're very limited and where they want to apply to medical school. So I don't think it'll hurt you to mention that at the end of the day.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Awesome. Safe driving in the rain. All right. I love bringing you all on for questions. All right. Let's bring on Miss Naya. Let me see. Hello, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Oh, I lost you for a second.
Me? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay, sorry. Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
So I guess I kind of had the guy previous to me kind of asked kind of the same question I had about volunteer hours. I basically, so I'm a super non-traditional student, I guess, and I'm also a mom. I work as a CNA right now, and I'm in school, and I don't have that many hours, I guess, to really dedicate to a bunch of volunteer hours. So I guess my question is, would that be frowned upon when I do get ready to apply?
Yeah. What's the alternative?
Try to try to squeeze somewhere.
There's only 24 hours in a day for you, me, and everyone else.
Yes, sir. Yes, right? Sir. Yes, sir.
Unless you're like traveling at the speed of light and then time expansion and all that fun stuff, but that's some Einstein stuff right there. At the end of the day, you need to focus on what you need to focus on to do the best that you can do.
Okay.
Always thinking about grades and MCAT score above everything else, because those are the two easiest things to prove that you're not ready for medical school.
Okay.
Right? So you need good grades. You need a decent MCAT score to prove to medical schools that you are academically capable of doing well in medical school and in passing the boards the first time you take them.
Okay. Right?
On top of that, you need some clinical experience because you need to prove to yourself that you like being around patients a lot. You need to do some shadowing so you can prove to yourself that you understand what the life of a doctor looks like.
Okay.
If you have some extra time, great. go solve world hunger.
Okay.
But if you don't, that's okay. There are some schools where they really, really value non-clinical volunteering. And if you don't do it, you might not have a chance at that school, but that's okay. There's 199 other schools out there.
Okay. And then I just have one last question. So during this whole COVID thing, I know it was rough for everybody. My grades just like went extremely low. My suck. like ridiculously low. My son was home a lot. I was like a pre-K teacher and it was really bad.
Kids are miserable, aren't they? I had two little ones home and it's just like, I ain't got time for you, kid. I want to go on Instagram.
So I'm just like wondering, how do I kind of step in front of that? Not trying to like avoid it, but like be honest about it, because like there was something going on. And
yeah, you know what? They obviously know this stuff was going on.
Yeah.
And so it just depends on the types of questions that are asked, typically in a secondary application.
Okay.
You may want to think about writing a disadvantaged essay. So a disadvantaged essay is very open to interpretation on how do you want to classify yourself as disadvantaged. If you're a mom, a single mom, whatever it is, you got a kid at home, and your time to commit to school is going to be different than a quote-unquote typical pre-med student, then maybe you want to consider yourself disadvantaged, and that may be a good spot to mention just COVID and being a pre-K teacher or whatever teacher and also a student and also whatever, right? There are lots of things to think about there. But if you don't want to mark yourself disadvantaged, there are usually lots of secondary essay prompts that will give you an opportunity to talk about those things.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. How much, the bigger question is, when are you applying to medical school?
So it looks like, I originally started at a community college, and then I said, this is my first semester at an actual like university.
Okay.
So I guess I'm considered a junior, but I think for me, I would have to do it maybe in a year and a half or something like that.
Okay.
Only because I don't think I'll be able to stand
I like that answer because it gives you a longer track record post bad grades and COVID to right. show that that was a fluke and that you right. are a good student.
Right. And then I did get your book. I got your book. And I'm gonna only take a couple more minutes.
You're fine.
Only want how you would I was in the Navy for only 4 years and I wanna know how.
What do you mean only 4 years? You were in the Navy for 4 freaking years. That's more than 98% of other people or whatever that stat is. So don't only 4 years me.
Okay.
I mean, it is the Navy. It's not the Air Force, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just want to know how I would, because it was a completely different job than going into this field. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know how I want to make, I don't know, how would I incorporate that? I guess
it's the most common question I get from vets, military vets and non-traditional career changers in general is okay. How do I make my prior career, whether it's military or not, either stand out on an application yeah. or how do I show that it's going to help me be a doctor?
Yeah. Okay.
And those are two questions that you don't need to worry about.
Okay.
You need to, in your application, obviously check off that you're a veteran and honorably discharged, I hope, and all that yes. stuff. And then in your activity list, you will put that you were in the Navy and you will put yes. your job and you'll talk about in your description the impact that it had on you. You do not have to tie random stuff into how it's going to help you be a good doctor.
Okay.
Just being in the military, the far majority of people reviewing your application will understand the commitment that it takes to be in the military, the dedication that it takes to be in the military, the teamwork and communication skills that it takes to be in the military.
Yes.
And all of those things on their own will help you stand out without you writing, well, being in the military really helped my communication skills, which is going to help me as a doctor because communicating okay. with patients is a really important thing. That's how a lot of students write their extracurricular activity descriptions. Okay. And in my opinion, that is the wrong way to do it because it doesn't show me who you are. It shows me who you think I need you to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Makes sense.
Got it?
Yes, sir.
Have you checked out Mapped yet?
Yes, sir. I have.
Are you using it?
Yes and no. Yes okay. and no.
Okay. Would you like a free year subscription with Mapped Advising and Mapped Chat in it as well?
Yes.
So you can chat with one of our advisors right inside of Mapped and ask questions as you go?
Yes.
All right. Then shoot me a direct message and I'll give you some details on what to do.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. All of that, despite of that ugly hat that you're wearing. Yankees, get out of here.
I'm sorry.
Have a good day.
Thank you, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Let's get some more people on. I love you guys. This is so fun. Knock him out of the box, Rick. I love it. Oh man. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. How you doing?
Oh, good. I didn't think I'd get on here, so now I'm really nervous. So I have a couple questions. I am non-traditional. I am okay. 37.
Okay.
And I am a junior for my undergrad. So right now I have, it's about a 3.5 GPA great. And about a 3.6 for science.
Great.
So I think I'm doing okay there.
Yep.
And then
upward trends.
Yes. Upward trends.
Great.
That, I have been trying to make sure because I didn't do great in biology my first semester. So,
okay.
I was a paramedic, and I also worked as a nursing assistant. And I think I kind of got it answered before where that's okay for clinical experience. Mm-hmm. But do you suggest that I shadow as well? Okay. So
a little bit. You don't need hundreds and hundreds of hours of shadowing, but if you can get a shadowing day every month or two, great.
Okay. All right. I went when I was working as a CNA, I was working in trauma and SICU. And so I kind of stalked the trauma surgeons a little bit on my breaks.
Yeah.
To get a little bit more experience. But also because I'm a Gemini and I have very, very weird interests. I was an event designer in Chicago and for about 8-9 years. And is that something I just leave off of the application?
Absolutely not. It's okay. Going back to the last student asking the question about how do I make my prior thing look good on the application, or how do I make it stand out in terms of how it's going to prepare me for medical school? You're sitting there thinking event planning has nothing to do with medical school. It has nothing to do with medicine. It has nothing to do with preparing me for a physician. So it's just useless. I'm going to leave it off. Okay. When in reality, what it does is it gives context to your whole application.
Okay.
It gives an extra piece of, it sounds like a very big part of your timeline to show what you were doing, right? You didn't just disappear for 8 or 9 years. You were an event planner. And in your activity description, again, you don't have to tie it to, this is how it's going to prepare me to be a good doctor. You just talk about the impact that it had. Were you really passionate about it? What did you love the most about it? You could talk about it in terms of impact, how many people came to your events, like how many businesses were impacted by your events, how much money was raised for the events. And those types of numbers, especially from a business world, shows impact. It shows the impact that you as a person can have on everyone around you, and tells me so much more about you than the fact that you just were CNA or that you shadowed or whatever else. Okay. So absolutely do not leave it off of your application.
Okay. Would you suggest that I renew my paramedic before I apply? Do you think it matters at all?
That kind of stuff doesn't matter. You don't need to put on your application that you have a paramedic certificate or a license, whatever. It's what you did with that license that matters.
Okay. All right. Do you have any other suggestions? I'm planning on applying or taking the MCAT in March.
Okay. Did you register yesterday or 2 days ago?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Go register. Make sure you get a seat.
Okay. And then do you have any other suggestions? Because, I mean, I'm 37.
Yeah.
So do you have any other suggestions? My dream school, I don't know if it's within reach, would be Northwestern or Rush.
Okay.
Do you have suggestions for me? I'm just really nervous that people are going to go, you're old, you don't have the time to have this big, great career. And
yeah. How dare you want to live your life past your 30s? How dare you? How dare you have aspirations past your 30s? You should have figured this shit out already. Sorry, I normally don't cuss on here, but
I went to the military and I had kids, and now it's my time.
Yeah. If you are super interested in those schools, reach out to them now as a non-applicant. Reach out and just say, "Hey, I'm non-traditional." I wouldn't focus on your age so much. You've mentioned it a couple times. You're like, I'm too old is the backstory behind mentioning your age a few times. That's not an issue, right?
Okay.
That becomes a little bit more of an issue, right? Just realistically speaking, when it comes to applying to residencies, when the residency directors are like, you're not going to be able to hang for 80 hours, 90 hours a week because you're old. but lots of non-traditional students in their 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s, go to medical school and complete residency without a problem. So take that out of your head. And if you are super interested in a couple of those schools, just reach out to them and try to formulate very specific questions for their school. Like, look at all their admissions criteria. If you're missing something, reach out to them and say, like, do you allow a substitution of this course instead of this one, or this letter of rec instead of this one? So you can really just dive in there. And then really stay on top of, are they doing any sort of virtual off open houses? Are they doing any sort of like the virtual things, the med school fairs that the AAMC and Comis put on? So okay. just be there in their face.
Okay, thank you.
You're really welcome.
I'm gonna go bio midterm, biochemistry midterm. So
go crush it. Really,
thank you.
Yeah, have a good one. All right. So you can see that a lot of the questions are founded in fear, right? Fear of being rejected for age, fear of being rejected for a lower MCAT score than what the median or average is, fear of not portraying my activity just right, fear of saying the wrong thing in a medical school interview. And I understand, right? I've been through this process. I understand that there is a lot at stake because you want to be a physician. You need to get into medical school to do that. And there are these people there that are picking apart your life story that you put in your application. And there's fear that it's not good enough. And I want to tell you that you don't have to stand out. You don't have to try to be better than everyone else. You just have to be yourself. Yourself is good enough. Yes, you have to have good enough grades. You have to have a good enough MCAT score. It doesn't need to be a 515. It doesn't need to be a 4.0. It has to be good enough to give medical schools the confidence that you are going to pass medical school in 4 years. You're going to pass your board exams first time taking them. That's the most important thing to think about. Good enough there. And then you just have to be a normal human being, right? You just have to be a normal human being who can communicate, who can write essays, and has done their due diligence in exploring healthcare, exploring medicine, putting yourself around patients, putting yourself around physicians. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. All right, let's bring on some more people. Hello, hello.
Hi, Dr. Gray.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually using the Lifelines account. It's two of us. It's Priscilla. She's a nursing student, and I'm a career changer post-bac. I just graduated nursing school.
Okay.
So I had a few questions for you. I just started my formal post-bac program.
Okay.
And I'm kind of confused on the timeline because I finished my post-bac at the end of April in 2023.
Okay.
So I'm confused. If I want to apply for the cycle that would be coming up, opening up in that May, when would I take my MCAT?
Yeah. So if you graduate in April of 2023 and you want to ideally start medical school July, August of 2023, you're applying May and June of 2022, this next coming cycle, which means you're taking the MCAT. The well, it depends, right? It depends because theoretically, if you graduate April 23, right, which is what you said, you theoretically could start medical school in July or August of 23. Are you planning on taking a glide year there so you wouldn't start medical school until 2024?
Yeah, I wouldn't take, I wouldn't start medical school until 2024. My program's a 2-year program.
I understand that. There are plenty of people who go into a 2-year program like yourself and still apply in the middle of the program, trying to get rid of that extra year. So
I
don't necessarily recommend that, depending on why you're doing your post-bac. If you're doing your post-bac because you were a history major and didn't take any science classes and you had a good GPA in undergrad and you're continuing your good GPA in your post-bac, that may be an option. If you're doing the post-bac because you were a biology major or chemistry major, whatever, some sort of science major in college, you or not, but you were pre-med or on this journey to some sort of pre-health career, and you took lots of science courses and you didn't do well, and now you're doing a formal post-bac to show that you can do well, then not applying until 2023 after your post-bac makes more sense because now you have all of that transcript data that goes into the application as extra evidence that you are smart enough, right? From a GPA perspective, right? Great. There's a whole other argument about grades and whether it's a mark of intelligence, which I think we all can agree it's not. But anyway, so it just depends. Why are you doing your post-bac?
Because I graduated from nursing school, but I only took 4 classes that did not go towards the prereqs.
Okay. And how was your GPA in nursing school?
It was a 3.1.
Okay. So not tremendous.
But I did bad in those sciences. Yeah, okay. I did really bad in those sciences.
Okay. So there's potentially your answer. So you should apply May, June of 2023.
Yeah.
Right after you graduate from your post-bac, which it sounds like that was your plan, you wouldn't start medical school until 2024. That means that you're taking the MCAT ideally by April of 2023. And so you're going to be finishing your post-bac and studying for the MCAT and working on all of your application stuff at the same time.
Okay.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, it is. I was just like, I know the big thing you emphasize, like applying early, applying as soon as it opens, applying as soon as it opens. So I guess April would be enough buffer time to start taking in April, get my results in May and see if I like got an optimal score. And that would give me room to take it again if necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember, you can submit your application without an MCAT score. So if you're feeling too much pressure and you're not going to get it done and you need to push it back until May or June, like that's okay too. I would still recommend getting in your application in June, July-ish so that you're earlier on there.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I have one more question.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, I'm kind of worried because when applying to my post-bac program, they calculated my BCPM already for me.
Okay.
And I have mapped. I haven't been able to plug in everything for MAP because my school's course catalog just got uploaded.
Okay.
But in terms of like my BCPM, I remember she said it was like a 2.9 because of the 4 classes I took in for nursing school. If I'm able to show that I did well in this program, would it average out my nursing grades plus the post-bac? Mm-hmm. And if it averages out to something that's not that great in terms of like a 3.5 or 3.4 or whatever it is,
yeah,
would I be judged upon the upward trend that I had between this program?
Yeah.
Or would it be, they would be looking at my GPA and I would be filtered out? That's what I'm worried about.
Unfortunately, every school is going to do something different. So they will have all of the data points. They will be able to, if they choose to, if it's part of their process, to see that upward trend. They will be able to see that there's this standalone post-bac program that you did and choose to evaluate you mostly on that if they want to. There are other schools out there that only look at the last 20 hours, the last 30 hours, the last 60 hours of credits to determine what your GPA is, to determine what your academic capability is. And that's why I've been saying that word a lot more lately, or those two words, academic capability, because a 3.4 with a super strong upward trend shows academic capability. It's not a great GPA, right? It's not super sexy 4.0, but it shows academic capability, right? A 3.0 with a really strong upward trend shows academic capability.
Right, okay.
And at the end of the day, it's up to the medical schools and their admissions process to determine how they're going to pick apart all of the data points. The medical schools, and this is a big kind of point of confusion for a lot of students, is if you watch any of my videos like Application Renovation or Mission Accepted, where I'm looking at a PDF of the application, the medical schools don't get that. The medical schools aren't looking at that PDF to evaluate your application. They're downloading all of the data points from the application service into their own software, into their own systems to manipulate and graph and chart and do whatever they want with all of the data. Okay. That PDF that you look at is just for you.
Oh, okay. All right, this is making sense. So when I'm doing like the information sessions and things, because my program brings medical schools in to speak with us. Is that one of the questions I should ask?
Yeah, you can.
Like, would they disclose that? Okay.
Yeah, you can. How do you look at upward trends? Do you any special calculations on last X number of credit hours to determine a GPA?
All right. That was so helpful, Dr. Gray. I love all your videos. I love your advice. And I'm going to surely be using MAP.
So awesome. Thank you so much. You are welcome. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Bye. All right, all right, all right. Some wonderful conversations this morning. Thank you all for being here, hanging out. We can go for another 20 minutes or so, if my voice can hold out.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, Dr. Gray. First of all, I'm actually a little bit nervous. I didn't think it was going to be that quick. But so I'm actually FSU graduate. I graduated this past May with my master's in biomedical engineering.
Okay.
And I did undergrad as a chemical engineer. And so basically, I'm coming in here because I am a little bit untraditional. And my family, like, I have... My dad is a doctor. My stepmom is also a doctor. My mom is a nurse. So I come from a family of like healthcare providers.
Yeah.
So and throughout this process, I started studying last year, and I feel like I've been on my own pretty much for it because like they didn't practice here. Like they, my dad went to study in Cuba, so I'm originally from Cuba. My stepmom is from Nigeria, so you know they all have like a different background of how they came to America and did the whole process again. So like, they're not familiar with how this system works, you know, in terms of MCAT. So anyway, fast forward, I graduated my undergrad with the 3.39, was in chemical engineer, and then my biomedical engineering degree, master's was like a 3.8 or something like that. And
What was the master's GPA?
I think it's a 3.8.
3.8, okay.
It's, yeah.
Okay.
And then I just got my MCAT score back. Yeah, because I took a 911 and I got a 502 on it, which is
great.
Not amazing. It's not bad, but it's just, and you know, it's just okay. It's just what I got on my test at home.
Yep.
So you know, now I got my stepmom kind of telling me, "Hey, like you should apply right now for medical school," and I'm completely against it because you know I watch your videos. You always say apply early. You have patients applying early everywhere. It says apply early. Especially since I don't have like amazing stats. And, you know, I kind of have that internal conflict because I want to tell them, you know, they are a doctor. So they, I guess they know what they're saying, but I'm like, but I know everywhere else it says not to. And, you know, I don't think it's in my best interest. So I guess this, what do you think I should do?
Well, what are the options?
So basically I'm also the, another feedback I'm working right now for Biosense Western. I don't know if you'd be, as a clinical accounting specialist. So my options are either retake the MCAT, try to get like a higher score to make my chances better. That's what I want to do. And then apply in June. That's what I want to do.
okay.
So
why not do that?
I guess because I have mom and dad in the bag, kind of like, you should apply now. And I'm like, no, well, that's too late.
Are your applications in?
No.
Do you have your personal statement written?
No, I will literally have to.
Then you literally cannot. I mean, you technically could, but literally.
That's like, what I was saying. I'm like, you're okay. Like, you can do that on a weekend. But I'm like, it will take months to do this. Like, there's no way.
You cannot.
Years.
You cannot. Say, I love you, mom and dad. You crazy.
Literally. I was like, I just need to hear from somebody that knows what they're talking about, like, you know what I'm saying? Because I was kind of, you know, telling myself, okay, listen to, you know, hire people that know what they're talking, and you know, you know, because this is what you do. And then another question I had was, I'm kind of like also conflicted, like, you know, applying for deals and like Caribbean schools and stuff like that based on my stats. Like, do you think like that's something I like, should I just stay away from MD schools if my stat, like if I don't get a greater MCAT score?
No.
And just, no? Okay.
No, you should not stay away from MD schools. I think you apply, you go get a better MCAT score if you can, figure out what went wrong this first time, and improve on that score. You did super well in your master's. Your undergrad GPA, not super stellar, but your master's is great. Go get a better MCAT score and apply to the schools that you want to apply to.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So many parents like chirping in your ear, like, you should apply, you should apply. Oh, you're good enough. Oh, I love you, honey. And it's just like, love you, mom and dad. You don't know what you're talking about. And so send them my way. We just did a workshop for parents of pre-meds last week, and it was a good turnout. So we're out there trying to help you, trying to get your parents off of your back. So hopefully we can continue to help with that. All right, so let's get some more people on. Good turnout this morning. Thanks everyone for coming and hanging out. All right. We'll bring on someone else. Go down the list. Next week, I should be able to go live. I'll go live on Instagram and TikTok at the same time. So that should be fun. Hello, hello.
Hi, my name is Jaleen Perez, and I am going to be graduating this December 2021. So my question is, because these past 2 years of undergrad, I've been really focusing on my grades, trying to survive my pre-med years with like really rigorous classes. I didn't do as much clinical experience like working, but I did volunteer and I did tutor. And I like those are the main components that I've been doing. But I haven't done that much clinical experience, but I do hope that once I graduate this December, I'll actually have a job like as soon as I graduate. And I've been applying to thrive. So I want to know like how bad it, like, is it going to affect me, my application, like when I apply in May. And I also want to mention that when I graduated high school, I did a lot of dual enrollment classes, but it was also part of, like, I was part of university, part of college, a part of high school.
Yep.
So during years, I did do clinical experience with the hospital every summer and in the spring semester as well. But will that actually count as clinical experience, or should I don't know, like, I'll have time to get these clinical hours, you know? I'll be graduating, I'll be studying for my MCAT as well. I registered for it like yesterday, like I'm gonna take it in March. You donated to me $100 like in the past, so I saved that money for my registration. So yeah, I just wanted to know, like, am I going to be affected if I start my actual, like, hands-on a clinical experience when I graduate?
What's the alternative?
There's no alternative, exactly.
There's no alternative, right? Are you going to not apply to medical school? Because you're like, well, I didn't get clinical experience soon enough, so I'm just not going to apply to medical school.
Well, the thing is, I have clinical experience. Like, I've done volunteering at a clinic, but it's not paid. Like, it's supposed to be paid.
Paid volunteer does not matter. Clinical experience doesn't matter. One type of clinical experience is not better than another, paid versus volunteer.
Okay.
So if you've been volunteering at a clinic, that doesn't necessarily mean it's clinical experience. It depends on what you're doing. But if you've been volunteering, getting clinical experience, that 1,000% counts. Post high school graduation. So you mentioned your dual enrollment stuff earlier. That typically wouldn't count because that's still in high school, even though you were taking courses at community college or 4-year university, whatever. Anything pre high school graduation typically wouldn't count. It's just that it's like this general rule of thumb that you just don't put anything high school wise on your application.
When it comes to clinical experience,
anything.
Okay, so what about if I took like English classes or math classes?
Well, those are college credits. So I'm talking about activities.
Okay, I see. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Gray.
You're welcome. So to conclude this, right, to really give you the final thing, is you don't have an alternative. It is what it is. You've done what you've done. You've focused in on areas that you focused in on, doing tutoring and other stuff that is non-clinical. And you may be questioned about, well, why weren't you doing clinical things? Why were you tutoring? Because if you're saying you have enough time to tutor, why weren't you getting clinical? And we've had this pandemic the last 18 months, 19 months, and a lot of people haven't been able to get clinical experiences. And so that may be a silver lining for you to go, well, it wasn't available with COVID. Obviously, you don't want to lie and say that if that's not the truth and you were just focused on grades or whatever else. But there is no alternative.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
I have one more question. Yeah. Are you going to be doing more like pre-med parent workshops? Because my dad, he was born in Mexico, right? So yep. He doesn't have experience with actually the college life or going into medical school. So yesterday he was kind of like getting mad because I was telling him that I'll be taking like a year and a half before I start medical school, like with God's will, everything will. And he was so confused and saying, well, what are you going to do? Years of college, like back in high school. So if there is going to be a pre-med parent workshop, please let me know. Also, like if there's also do it in Spanish or a different language.
Yeah.
Like,
so Verinia, who ran the workshop, she's a native Spanish speaker. So she 1000% she's from the Dominican, her family's from the Dominican. She 1000% can answer questions in Spanish if someone is asking questions in Spanish. So that's not an issue. But yeah, we talked about it and we're going to try to put together a Spanish only workshop for those parents. But that workshop is still available if you go to map.com/parent so that he can watch it and get an idea of what's going on. But it is in English, that one is.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Gray.
Yeah, you are welcome. I wonder, we definitely can go get it subtitled in Spanish for closed captioning. Do you think that would help?
Yes, it will. All right. Tremendously help.
We'll definitely do that then. All right. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. I have a project coming out at some point. we're waiting. I should send an email. I've recorded like 25 or 26 episodes of a Spanish for Pre-Meds podcast where I am the student learning Spanish. I took 5 years of Spanish back in like middle school, high school. So I understand a lot of Spanish still. I don't speak it as well, like very common, right? But I partnered with a professor at Virginia Tech who teaches Spanish for medical professionals. And so we have recorded a bunch of podcasts. We brought on some special guests to talk more about some cultural stuff as well. And we're having it converted into a book right now as well. So to help all of you non-Spanish speakers to hopefully give you a little bit of a foundation of some Spanish as well. All right. All right. All right. Lots of awesome people coming on. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Gray. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, awesome. Sorry, I'm in my library, so I'm trying to be a little quiet. But so I just had, I think I have two questions, but maybe, I don't know if there will be more that come up. But okay. I mainly, so just to give like background info, I'm a junior undergrad, so not really planning on like MCAT maybe until like 2023, 2024. But I mainly had a question just about like clinical slash volunteering, just because I know that's been like so out of whack because of COVID.
Yep.
I had something kind of lined up when I came back for winter break back home for a volunteering experience, but obviously then COVID happened in March and that just didn't happen. And so on campus, I had a volunteering experience, but I haven't really been very adamant of going just because it's like one of the only hospitals in the city that like accepts volunteers. There's so many people and there's only one department open. So it's restocking PPE. And when I go, there's never anything to do. And I'm just worried just because like, I want to have meaningful like volunteering experiences and not so just do anything. That's what I've been doing, but I've been feeling guilty about it because I think, you know, like in a pre-med mindset that I want to, you know, have this as like something that I want to commit to and I want to like it, but it's hard to do something when it's like there's nothing to do.
Yeah, it's not a good experience for you. It's not clinical experience. You're not happy doing it. Then don't do it and go find something else to spend your time doing.
Yeah, in the summer I'm planning on taking a CNA training course to hopefully become a CNA, and I'm hoping that is like a better experience for me. So like, great. If I were to do that hypothetically, would I like need to try to do volunteering as well? Because I don't see
volunteer and paid does not matter, right? Volunteer, okay. Paid. So if you're being paid as a CNA, it doesn't matter that you're not volunteering to get clinical experience.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, that's awesome. I think I had another question, but I can't remember. So I feel a little starstruck right now. Sorry about that. But But I think other than that, actually I did have one question. So
yeah.
This coming semester, for spring 2022, I am going to study abroad, and I'm really excited about that.
Okay.
But I am a little worried, like kind of looking beyond after I graduate from undergrad, how that might look like on a transcript, just because I am planning on taking OCHEM, but I usually tend to take like 2 to 3 science courses like per semester, and I'll be kind of like downgrading this semester in junior year. You know, that's kind of like, you know, close senior year, close to like end of graduation. So I'm just wondering like how that would look like when I'm starting to apply to medical schools, or like if I should be worried about that at all.
What's the concern?
I'm just concerned of like from a medical school admissions perspective, if it looks like I'm just kind of taking a break, or I'm trying to just like,
because you won't have the clinical experience there, or just because your courses are a little bit lighter because you're doing the travel abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is what it is. If that's what you want to do, go do it.
Okay. Just because I feel like I should worry about it, but I also like
pre-meds feel like they should worry about everything.
Yeah,
and that's just not the case, right? If that's what you want to do, go do it. And the experiences that you'll have will be wonderful, and you'll be able to write about them and talk about them, and you'll be fine.
Okay, I think that's all my questions. But thank you so much. Have a great rest of your life.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get Rachel back on, who was with us when everything crashed. Go live your life, says Erica. Exactly. Hello, hello.
Hey, how are you?
I am wonderful. Apparently, Instagram did not like us being together here. So
yeah, I was like, oh no, did I like fuck off? I actually just left, or like Zoom left an interview. And I actually have a question that popped up in my head. Sometimes at the end, they like to ask, like, do you have any questions for me?
Yep.
And sometimes I like have a specific set of questions to ask. Is it wrong to ask, like, is it a red flag if you ask about like mental health services, or ask about like, what does the school do? Like if a student does fail, does that like, I don't know, is that wrong? Like,
I wouldn't say it's wrong, right? But unfortunately, human nature is like, why are you asking that? Are you concerned about that? Are you worried you're going to fail? Like, and we want confident people, right? Yeah. And so I wouldn't say it's wrong. I probably wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
For one other specific reason. The interviewers very likely don't have any idea what those policies are, what those resources are. You have to remember, all of you have to remember, that the people doing interviews, the interviewers at medical schools, are a broad swath of that community there. They could be lawyers in the community, nurses in the community, doing medical school interviews. They could be faculty members, instructors, professors at the institution. They could be physicians who work at the hospital as part of the faculty of the medical school, but they're not ingrained, they're not entrenched into the medical school curriculum and all of the resources, all of that stuff. So as just general advice, I don't recommend asking very specific questions to interviewers. I like asking opinion-based questions. Like, what's your favorite thing about the school that nobody knows about? Right? It helps you understand the school. It is an opinion-based question that anyone should be able to answer. It's kind of talking about themselves, which is always a kind of a general piece of advice for interviews and asking questions. So I think there are lots of opportunities to ask questions that don't have to get super nitty gritty specific, where the interviewer is just like, I don't know.
Okay. And with Zoom, so I know that Zoom can be unforgiving sometimes. One of my first interviews, I think like the first 10 minutes was like Zoom problems. Is it okay to email and like, I don't know, ask for like, I don't know.
A redo?
Yeah, for a redo. It's only supposed to be like 30 minutes. So I'm like, 10 minutes is lost because it shut down like 5 times. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Was it on your side?
It was on both sides.
Oh, wow.
So at first, and then 2 minutes later we were on, and then the whole interview shut down because the interviewer's computer shut down. And so I was like, oh no, this would be my luck. But yeah.
I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't stress about it. I know you're stressed about it. But that's the world we live in right now, right? In this kind of telecommuting, telework, telemedicine world, people have tech issues. And honestly, your reaction to that situation likely told the interviewer a lot, right? Were you cussing behind the scene and they heard you and whatever, right? Or were you sweating and nervous and anxious? Or were you like, oh, that sucks. Let's keep talking. Right? That alone is a part of the interview process now.
Okay, cool. All right. I think those are all questions for today. Right.
Well, congrats on the interview. Fingers crossed.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
You're welcome. You too. It's October 15th. For all of you who don't know, October 15th for the AAMC traffic rules means MD medical schools outside of early decision can start telling students their acceptance, their status when it comes to their decisions for their admittance to medical school. So fingers crossed. Congratulations to all of you getting those acceptances today and in the near future. And if it's not you, like it was me the first time I applied to medical school, it's not the end. It's just a not now. So good luck. Fingers crossed. Thank you all for being here and coming on and asking wonderful questions. I'll see you next Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern again. Bye. All right. There you have it. It's our IG Live. Before we end, I want to talk about the MCAT Minutes brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. If you haven't heard, Blueprint has launched their brand new spaced repetition platform with over 1,600 MCAT flashcards expertly crafted by them, not some random person on the internet where you're downloading from some site where you might catch a computer virus. Again, that's MCATflashcards.com for Blueprint's brand new spaced repetition platform with over 1,600 expertly crafted flashcards already created for you to start learning today. Thanks for the MCAT Minutes brought to you by Blueprint MCAT for that. Hope you have a great week. Don't forget to go check out medicalschoolhq.net/apply to apply to be a guest on one of our series. And we'll talk to you soon.
This is MedEd Media.